NHPRnews.com. I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. No matter what their political leanings, our guest today had to be pretty happy with how President Obama kicked off his Christmas shopping this past weekend, buying 21 books at an independent bookstore in Washington, D.C. It's our holiday book show today in The Exchange, and two Granite State indie booksellers are here with their favorite reads of late 2013. And even without the glamour of a president perusing their aisles, both of them say it's been a pretty good year for business, with the economy picking up and New Hampshire's buy local trend steaming ahead. Also, smaller bookstores finally got a boost from the big publishing houses, who've made it a lot easier for customers to purchase e-books from independents, not just from Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So, all in all, local booksellers are in a jolly mood this holiday season, and this hour we'll talk about that, and of course get our guests' picks for gift-giving this year, even if one of those gifts happens to be for yourself. Again, it's our holiday book show today in The Exchange. Let's hear from you. What have you heard about the best new books to give or get this season? Also, if you're looking for someone on your list, do you need an idea of a particular type of book? Give us a call. We can probably help you out. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Post a comment on our Facebook page. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And our booksellers are Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. And Michael, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Hi, Laura. Great to be here.
Also with us, Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter. And Dan, welcome back. Nice to see you, too.
Thanks for having me back, Laura.
Well, Michael, to you first. You know, we heard about the holiday shopping over the weekend. Reports this morning said that people were definitely out there, more people perhaps than last year, but spending a little bit less. What kind of a mood do your book buyers seem to be in this year?
Well, they were very exuberant this weekend. We sure hope it carries over, and there were a lot of them.
A lot of them.
A lot, yes, a lot of them, yeah. We have a bigger store now, and you know, it's we have room to accommodate lots of people, and they came, thank goodness.
Yeah, really. What do people seem to be looking for this year, Dan, and how much do they seem willing to spend? There's been a lot of looking at the economy, and of course the holiday shopping season is a big important part of that.
I just want to lead off by congratulating Michael on his new store. It is one of the finest bookstores in New England, if not the country at this point.
I should say, last time we talked,
keep talking,
he hadn't,
Dan. Wait,
expanded
don't interrupt. Dan's on a roll.
You've got to stop by Gibson's and check out this new, beautiful new store.
Well, let me return the compliment, Dan, and just say that independent bookstores all over the country, including Water Street, are just stepping up and doing the best they can in their communities to make a home for book lovers. And you've done a great job with your redesign and community involvement. Water Street Books is tops.
Well, so how was the weekend, Dan?
So to get back to the question, and thank you, Michael.
You're very welcome.
The weekend was great. One of the things that happens in Exeter the weekend after Thanksgiving is that we have a lot of people who have never been in the store before because they're visiting family and friends, celebrating the weekend there. And so we have kind of a different crowd that comes in, and we get to see the store through their fresh eyes. And they were raving about the store all weekend. They were buying in healthy amounts. And I do want to give a shout out to Governor Hassan, who stopped by the bookstore on Saturday.
Okay, so you didn't have President Obama, but you had Governor Hassan. That's good.
We did have Maggie, and she bought up a storm, and as did our other patrons. Pardon me. And it was a great weekend. And the economy is coming back. It really is.
It's coming
is.
Back, too. And you know, the book business kind of famously really is recession-proof because books, no matter what people say, they're kind of inexpensive. They're inexpensive pleasures. They last for a long, long time. I mean, you know, you can blow $50, $100 on a meal that's maybe just mediocre at best. But, you know, you spend $20 on a great book and you have it forever. So, you know, books are, a great bargain.
Looking back over the year, guys, and we'll get into your favorites list and we'll get into some of the different genres and what you're seeing out there. But just looking back over 2013, Dan, what kind of a year was 2013 for book publishers in terms of the quality that they put out there? I mean, was it a year where you just went, wow, that's great, wow, that's great? Or you went, you know, those editors could have worked a little harder, or why did people write a book about that? I mean, some years are definitely better than others.
Well, one of the trends that I picked up on is that after 9/11 in 2001, there was a real dip in interest in books, fiction reading. And it held that dip kind of it held for a good decade. But fiction is back, and I just want to go through a quick list of great authors who have published great novels in the last 12 months. Andre Debus III has Dirty Love. Stephen King has his sequel to The Shining, Dr. Sleep. Donna Tartt has a new book after a long time, The Goldfinch. Yumpa Lahiri has The Lowland. Margaret Atwood, Mad Adam. Amy Tan has a new book after years, nothing from her, Valley of Amazement. So, I mean, there are just these amazing fiction works that have come tumbling out from real masters, and that is just so good for our industry and for our culture and our society. I really believe that some of the best work is the fiction work.
Yeah, the year of the big fiction.
Yeah, I certainly agree. I think that, publishing is getting harder and harder. It's harder and harder to succeed in it, and it's sharpening people up. The publishing community has responded to pressure in a positive way, and they're bringing out some really great books.
What do you mean by that? The publishing industry has sharpened people up.
Well, the travails of it, it's become tougher and tougher to succeed. You know, profit margins are getting squeezed. There's a lot of difficulty involved. It's not a career. It never really was a career for amateurs, although kind of it was. But now there's sort of amateurism 2.0. You know, it's They're really doing a great job.
I think another way to say what Michael's trying to say is that the traditional model of publishing has really been put under pressure by disintermediation, by electronic modes, and they have really looked hard at their model. They've innovated, but they've also gone back to things that they know they do well, and they've kind of doubled down on those. And the result is more and better books.
You know, both of you mentioned that it's been a great year for sort of big, beloved, prominent fiction authors. And Michael, Dan mentioned Margaret Atwood, Amy Tan, Stephen King. Who else among this sort of masters of fiction are you selling this year?
Well, The Goldfinch comes to mind. Dan mentioned Donna Tartt. She seems to publish a novel every 10 years. And, you know, every time she publishes a novel, the publishing landscape has changed completely. So it must be kind of a weird trip for her to go out into the world having worked for 10 years on a novel and found that the landscape totally transformed yet again. The Goldfinch is a great, great novel. It's a post 9/11 novel because it opens with a fictional act of terrorism at a museum in New York, and a famous painting that actually does exist disappears, and we follow the travails of the young protagonist, throughout some great adventures. It's a very Dickensian story. I think a couple of the really long novels this year have really appealed to a 19th century model in storytelling. And, another one is The Luminaries by Catton, which won the Booker this year. You know, feels very 19th century but also very contemporary at the same time. It's been a great year for really long fiction. And at the same time, it's been a great year for really short fiction. You know, Alice Munro, has a wonderful collection. George Saunders, we talked about earlier in the year, 10th of December, great short story collection. So it's a great time for both really long, long narratives and short stories.
You know, and both of you are talking about, again, well-known authors, and people get excited when they see that their favorite author, who they haven't heard from in a while,
right,
has a new book out. How about some of the new folks on the scene, Dan Chartrand, any great new fiction by sort of breakout authors that people are raving about?
Well, a couple things. A book that we like a lot is a book called Night Guest. It's a novel by Fiona McFarlane, and it's story of a woman named Ruth in her 70s who's living alone on the coast of New Zealand, and she's doing okay. But then this woman knocks on her door and says she's from the government, and she's there to help her, and she lets her in. And it's the story kind of unfolds from that. It has some mysterious elements to it. This woman was a Bennett Fellow at the Academy a number of years ago, and she's gone on to, study in creative writing programs, teach in programs, and now she's published this amazing book called The Night Guest by Fiona McFarlane. Relatively unknown and kind of a new discovery for our industry and for booksellers. So,
other new authors, fiction authors who've got people talking, Michael.
Well, we were talking before the show about sort of the crossover between the young adult market and kids that are no longer kids. They're in their 20s, but they still like that kind of YA feel. We have some booksellers. Hi, Ryan, if you're listening. The Thinking Woman's Guide to Real Magic has been very popular with some of them by Emily Croy Barker. She worked as a journalist for 20 years and just published her first novel. And it's a doozy. It's about what happens when magic all of a sudden becomes real. They're very popular with the younger kids. So, you know, there's some new talent coming up both in bookselling and in writing.
Let's take some calls, gentlemen, if we could. Again, the number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. It's our holiday book show today in the exchange, the 2013 edition. We're looking at some of the best books of the year with two New Hampshire booksellers. You can see their favorites at our website, nhpr.org. Give us a call now, 1-800-892-6477. And Steve's joining us from Nottingham. Hi, Steve, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. And my favorite book for this year is by Dara Horn. It's called The Guide to the Perplexed. What it does is it's actually a page turner. It means I couldn't put it down. But it was a kidnapping story set against modern technology and the revolution in Egypt, weaving in the book of Maimonides, Guide to the Perplexed. So it integrated both a biblical sense or a Talmudic interpretation with a modern-day crisis and a family dynamic. And it was extremely interesting and quite provocative and, as I say, I couldn't put it down.
Awesome. I love that feeling, Steve, when you can't put something down, even though it's way past your bedtime. Dan Chartrain, have you heard of this book?
I have heard of that book, and Dara Horn has published previous books. I can't think of the titles right off the top of my head, but she's someone with a fairly established track record. You did a great job of describing that book. I'm going to see your Dara Horn and raise you with The Night Guest. I'm sorry, no, not The Night Guest. Night Film. It's a novel by Marisha Pessel. She wrote Special Topics in Calamity Fiction. Night Guest is a book that three of our booksellers have read and loved, and it has kind of the same interweaving of other literary or cultural sources into a kind of a mystery story, and it's wonderful.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. We'll take more of your calls after a short break. 1-800-892-6477.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. And this week, Writers on a New England Stage welcomes Pulitzer Prize-winning author historian Doris Kearns Goodwin. She'll be reading from her latest book, The Bully Pulpit, and speak with NHPR's Virginia Prescott about researching the book. Join us at the Music Hall in Portsmouth Wednesday evening. Tickets and information are at themusichall.org, sponsored in part by TransCanada Corporation. New Hampshire weather cloudy today, chance of rain, highs from upper 30s to around 40 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Portsmouth Woodcraft, featuring a wide variety of woodworking tools and supplies. Fox Run Road, Newington in Portsmouth, woodcraft.com. Woodcraft, helping you make woodwork. From the McLean Law Firm and its family law group for divorce and annulments, prenuptial agreements, adoption, and legal separations, online at mclane.com. And Bellamy Fields Assisted Living in Dover. More information on geriatrics with a sense of humor, online at bellamyfields.com. 920, this is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our annual holiday book show. We're taking a look at some of the best books of late 2013. Two New Hampshire booksellers are giving us their favorites, and we want to hear what new books might be on your list. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. By the way, at our website, nhpr.org, you can see the top picks of our guests, and we'll add the name of any book that is mentioned during our conversation today. Again, nhpr.org. Lots of information for you there. Before we go back to our listeners, Michael Herman, I wanted to pick up on a theme you were mentioning just before the break, this idea that, you really can't keep young adult fiction in a separate aisle from all the other fiction because older adults are reading young adult, and there's a lot of great stuff out there. There's a real blurring of the lines in that genre.
The crossover works both ways. That's right. And I don't know, if you want to analyze it culturally, you could say people aren't quite sure when they've grown up anymore, but maybe that's always been true. But, for instance, Neil Gaiman's Ocean at the End of the Lane, which I think we talked about in the summer reading show, is a wonderful, provocative fantasy that works both for young adults and for adults. You know, there's a lot of energy being poured into the YA market because those kids, you know, despite all the, you know, what you read in the, you know, in the tech blogs and everything else, they love to read. It doesn't matter the format. They love books.
Now, there's been some fighting in our house about who gets the next Percy Jackson book. So, yeah. Dan Chartrand.
Well, we have a couple of YA books on our best fiction of the year list. And one of them is an author who's appeared on our best of before. Rainbow Rowell has a new book called Fangirl, which is a wonderful YA novel that a lot of adults are reading. Several of our adult booksellers are reading it and recommending it to all ages. And it's actually a great book because it kind of talks about the process of emulating an author with your own writing and then sort of putting that out into the marketplace, which is a phenomena that we've seen with a few books over the last few years. And then there's also a great book by Patrick Ness called More Than This. Patrick Ness is a young adult author from the young adult field, but he's breaking out into the adult market as well. So it's just a trend that we're seeing more and more. There's no... It's also happening with genre. It's not just happening with sort of age. It's there's no barriers. Readers just love great work.
Yeah, so how do you organize your bookstore? Right?
I mean, there's more and more crossover and there's more and more cross-shelving that's happening. We're having to track multiple places where books are shelved. They're not just in one place anymore.
I see. So,
which is great for the publishers because it means bookstores have to buy more copies.
Right. But so in the past, Michael Ware, maybe you would have put a book on the young adult shelf. Now you'd put it on young adult and also mystery, for example.
Or you might just...
You place it twice.
You might put together a table that is organized around a particular theme.
Yeah. For instance, at Water Street Bookstore, we have a kiosk of young adult books. And the reason why an adult should read them, and it's right at the cash wrap of the adult side of the store. So.
Did you want to jump in on that?
The one thing I just want to say: publishers are taking advantage of this to publish things that maybe 10 or 20 years ago wouldn't really have been published. For instance, Isabel, our children's buyer, brought this book to my attention: "The Boy on the Wooden Box." It's kind of a memoir and a work of history by the kid who just recently passed away, who was the youngest person on Schindler's List.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's a memoir about his experiences.
And is that for kids or adults? Because that's pretty heavy stuff.
It's for kids. It's for kids. It's published as a YA book. It's called The Boy on the Wooden Box. He was the youngest kid on Schindler's List. And he lived to the age of 83, wrote a memoir, just passed away last January.
Wow. So it's a true story.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, again, you can give us a call with your questions about that hard-to-buy for person on your gift list this year, or if you just want to talk about some of your favorite books, favorite new books of 2013, as it's our holiday book show today in The Exchange, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Bob's calling from Concord. Hi, Bob. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I would like to recommend a book I bought at Gibson's on the day it came out, I believe, The Guns at Last Light by Rick Atkinson. It's the third volume in a trilogy that he's been writing for 20 years or so about the American Army in World War II. The first volume covered North Africa, the second one Sicily and Italy. This one is about the European War from D-Day to the end of the war. And it is the first volume won the Pulitzer Prize. The second maybe should have. The third is tops both of those. It is a tremendously eloquent and moving book, beautifully, beautifully written. He pulls off an allusion, for example, on page 40 to Matthew Arnold's poem Dover Beach, which will take your breath away. And you don't think of war writing being beautiful. This is. And it's a story of you know, enormous courage, great stupidity at times.
Yep.
The conclusion about the identification and disinterment and reburial of American dead will bring tears to your eyes. If you don't read the whole book, just read the last five pages and you'll see what great writing really, really is.
Wow, Bob, thank you. I'm so glad you called. Yeah, go ahead, Michael, you first and then Dan.
Sure, yeah, I just wanted to point out that was on my list. John, who's our adult book buyer and is a real history buff, is just in love with the Liberation Trilogy. Thought that Atkinson's work was just tops in its field. He wanted me to be sure to mention that today. So I'm glad your caller mentioned it first. Great description of it.
Yeah, Dan.
Yeah, I had it on my summer reading list. And what the caller said about the last five pages, the last five pages of that book might have been one of my peak reading experiences of this past year. You have to read the whole book to get the payoff. You can't just go to the last five pages. But it is one of the most eloquent summations of what the experiences in World War II meant, both in a positive and a negative way, for the people that were, you know, the American citizens that were sprayed across the globe during World War II. The caller's absolutely right. Those five pages are just so eloquent and so beautiful and so heartbreaking. It's great writing.
Oh, I've got this image of people coming into your bookstores and kind of sneaking that book off the shelf and just grabbing the last five pages.
We have chairs.
Read the whole thing. Well, and I'm glad you called, Bob. Thank you very much, because there are some really good-looking history books on both of your lists. Michael, you've got a World War I history book, and it seems like there's been a lot of attention on World War I this year.
Well, we're coming up to the 100th anniversary of the breakout of World War I, and so there are a lot of very serious and very good works being published right now. The War That Ended Peace by Margaret Macmillan has just come out. Max Hastings has Catastrophe 1914. There's a wealth of great new books about World War I, in addition to what Atkinson's done with World War II.
Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
The same with another book is Sleepwalkers, which I had on my summer reading list about how the continent kind of drifted towards war. And then I just went back and reread Barbara Tuchman's Guns of August, which is a great old book and about the roots and causes and beginning of World War I.
It's so funny. John was talking to me about the World War I books. He says nobody's topped that one yet.
Yeah, Guns of August by Barbara Tuchman is not just published, but it's great. A couple other history books I have on my list are, it's a great book called Lawrence in Arabia that's on the top 100 list from the New York Times. And then a book that we're really passionate about, and two writers that we're passionate about, The Heart of Everything That Is by Bob Drury and Tom Clavin. This is their third book. They wrote a book about Admiral Halsey in the Pacific, and then they wrote a book set in Korea with American soldiers in Korea. This is the untold story of Red Cloud, the probably the greatest Sioux chief that no one's ever heard of.
Yeah, I have not heard of him.
Yeah, so that's a great read. Jean-Paul is recommending that, and he recommended it to me, and I read it, and it's wonderful.
Well, and Lawrence in Arabia, War, Deceit, Imperial Folly, and the Making of the Modern Middle East by Scott Anderson. Sounds like these days, Dan, that would be a useful book to have, because it's very confusing for Americans to figure out what's going on there, and some of the history of how that area was carved up would be helpful.
Right. So much of the dysfunction of the Middle East is all about sort of the imperial, the way they carved the Middle East up arbitrarily.
So. Two more history books that you guys didn't mention, then I want to go back to our callers and emails and so forth. Doris Kearns Goodwin. Okay, I'm supposed to be unbiased, but I loved her Lincoln book. Just loved it. And I'm thrilled, Michael, she's got a new one.
She does, yeah. It's about the first decade of the let me pull it out over here. What did I do with that? It's the first decade of the Progressive Era with Teddy Roosevelt. Here it is.
By the way, I want to let our listeners know that the guys came in this morning not with a couple bags of books, not with a box of books, but each of them came with two giant boxes of books. And we've got pictures on our website and our Facebook page, so you can check it out if you want to see.
They're heavy this time of year. Yeah. You know, they're printed on this nice glossy paper. But anyway, the Doris Kearns Goodwin is called The Bully Pulpit, and it's the first decade of the Progressive Era about the original friendship and then later rivalry between Teddy Roosevelt and William Howard Taft. And
I see. It's not just about Teddy Roosevelt.
No. It's about their relationship, and it goes into many letters together, a lot of primary sources. It's a great work of history.
And another favorite New England historian, Nathaniel Philbrick, Dan, has a new book. We talked to Mr. Philbrick on this program a couple months ago. It's called Bunker Hill. It's about that time, you know, leading up to the American Revolution. It's a great book.
Yeah, that was on our summer reading list as well. And it chronicles how Bunker Hill really sort of led to the evacuation of Boston by the British, which was really the first great victory of the Revolution. And it talks about the siege, and it's Philbrick is a great writer.
A lot of unsung Revolutionary War heroes that you've never heard of. People who died pretty early on, and that's why I haven't heard of them, but they were really central figures in terms of making this
happen. Dr. Joseph Warren's my favorite character in that book, and he died at the Battle of Bunker Hill at the very beginning of the Revolutionary War.
Again, our number for you to join our holiday book show is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. If you're looking for someone on your list, do you need an idea of a particular type of book, give us a call. Also, if you've got books that really jumped out at you this year that you would consider the best books of 2013 to give or to get this holiday season, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like, NHPR Exchange, all one word. Here's an email that came in from Matt in Hollis. He says, my mother recently moved to New Hampshire. She's an avid nonfiction reader. Can your guests recommend one or more good nonfiction books, not necessarily new, about New Hampshire personalities slash history? Dan, I'm going to throw that to you first.
Well, first of all, I would recommend that your mother go to the local library or the local bookstore and find the town history for the town that she's moved to. Every town in New Hampshire has a one or multi-volume history of the town. It's fascinating reading. It's not something to read straight through. It's something to jump around in, poke around in, get a feel for the town you're living in. New Hampshire culture is so much a town and city culture. So that's my first recommendation. And then, as someone who's moved to the state, we have this fun book from a local Seacoast writer called Gary Patton called Out of Status. And it's Newcomer's Adventures in New Hampshire. And it's a collection of Gary's writing about New Hampshire as he came to the state 20 years ago. And he's accumulated some articles that have been published in local newspapers and put them in book form. And it's just a very funny look at what the process of acculturating to this state is. It's a very unique state. It has a very unique culture. It's a great question that they've emailed to us.
Yeah, Matt, thanks a lot for the email. Michael?
I've got a couple to suggest. Maxine Kuhman wrote, there was a collection of essays she came out with maybe 20 years ago called Women, Animals, and Vegetables, which is just a marvelous study of country living. They moved up, Maxine and Victor moved up to a Warner from Boston like 50 years ago, I guess. And also you can't, understand New Hampshire without reading the prose of Donald Hall. You have Life Work, String Too Short to Be Saved. These are marvelous books. More contemporary, Plaid Swede, a local publisher, and Islandport Press in Maine have been publishing the humor and the essays of Becky Rule, and that would be a good place to start, too.
And Howard Mansfield, a favorite New Hampshire author, has a new book out this year as well.
He does. It's called Dwelling in Possibility. It's funny. It's a very broad in scope, but it's also very local in content. It's got a great description of the ice storm from a couple of years ago, and but it's also just its subject is very large. It's about what it means to live in houses. It's a great cultural critique.
Yeah.
Howard is our Emerson for the 21st century. He's just an amazing writer, and he is completely of New Hampshire.
He's married to an amazing writer, too, Simon Comrie. So if you want to know anything about nature or culture,
you've got it all there relationship.
That's right.
Thanks a lot for the email, Mark. Again, the email address is exchange at nhpr.org. Our Facebook page is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Mark's waiting in Sanbornton. Hi, Mark. Go ahead. You're on the Exchange. Welcome.
Good morning. I wanted to call in on a book that I just received, and it was actually featured on NPR. And it was a true story about a World War II B-17 pilot. The book is called Higher Call. And I believe the author was Matos. I don't have it in front of me. But it's a true story about a bomber, a pilot that had just dropped his bombs on Germany. And a German fighter, was dispatched to destroy it. It was horribly damaged, the bomber was. Most of the gentlemen or the officer's crew was killed. And the plane was amazingly still flying. The German pilot pulled up alongside, scaring the bejeepers out of the American pilot, and actually signaled him, because he was headed in the wrong direction. Most of his instruments were out. Signaled him and showed him how to get to the English Channel. And, ultimately, the crazy part of the story is that the bomber made it successfully back to base. The German pilot returned to his base and was told his superiors that the bomber had crashed into the channel, the English Channel. In 1982, by happenstance, the two pilots reconnected.
Oh, wow, Mark. What a story.
One living in Vancouver the American pilot living in, I think it was Fort Lauderdale.
Okay, Mark, thank you for calling. Dan Chartrand?
Yeah, that's a great book. It came out late in December last year.
A week before Christmas.
None of us had enough stock, so this is really its first holiday season.
The guy had a killer, killer interview right before Christmas, and everybody wanted that book last Christmas, and then it's been selling steadily ever since, but maybe this is its first real holiday season.
Now, this gets back to the business side of what you guys do, which we talked about a little earlier. So, Michael, if they, being the publishers, if they have a great book like that, you know, why didn't they get it to you sooner?
Well, you know what?
Aren't they a little bit more strategic than that?
It wasn't the publisher's fault. They didn't know that this guy gave such a great interview. It was really, I think, was it Diane Rehm? I forget where he was,
yeah,
but he was on the air, and then all of a sudden, he created his own demand. It was the
and it was a timing thing as well, because that last week before the holidays, on National Public Radio, when there's an interview, everyone comes into the store for that book.
Oh, you don't have it.
Well, we have a couple of copies.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe 10.
Yeah, exactly.
Who knows?
I mean, it was something that we expected to do well in January, but the publicity hit right before the holiday at the peak of our traffic. Our peak is not Black Friday. Our peak is the last 10 days of the holiday
season,
when people are sick of traipsing to the mall and they stay local.
What about e-books, though? Okay, last year, Michael, if I came in and said, you know, 10 days or a week before the holiday, I said, hey, I want this great book that Mark, our caller, describes. Could you have gotten it for me on an e-book?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, you know.
At your store?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, independent booksellers, both Dan and I and a lot of independent bookstores make that available, absolutely, through a Kobo. It's the device that we sell, and we sell e-books to that platform.
And how big a shift has that been for you, Michael? How much has that changed your business?
Negligible.
Really?
Yeah, virtually nothing. We want to make it available, but I think people have made that decision before they come into our store. I think if they come into our store, they want the tactile feel of a physical book. That being said, so a lot of people read on all platforms. You know, they'll read scraps of paper in the street. They'll read anything. They'll read a book. They'll read an e-book. We just want to make sure that we can accommodate anybody who wants to read.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've got it there.
Our job is to support people in reading. It's not to decide for them what format they read in. Our job is just to support people in reading.
That being said, I mean, both Dan and I have put up beautiful bookstores that are very welcoming, and we want people to come in and take a look at the physical books. We got into this business out of the love of the physical book.
All right. Very interesting. Thank you, Mark, for that call. We'll take more of your calls after a super short break. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. All one word. We'll be right back.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, ongoing rollout challenges for the Affordable Care Act, then the author of Gorky Park on his latest thriller set in Vladimir Putin's Russia. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from the Boston Pops Holiday Concert December 14th at the Verizon Wireless Arena, conducted by Keith Lockhart with sing-alongs and Christmas classics. Tickets at Ticketmaster.com. And from Waste Management, each person generates 4.5 pounds of waste each day, which is fuel to create renewable energy. See how waste-to-energy works at ThinkGreen.com. Good morning. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, turns 20. Email us your thoughts before the program at exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, and be sure to join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, it's our holiday book show. We're talking with two local independent bookstore owners about what's popular this holiday season. You can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. In your opinion, what do you think are among the best new books to give or get this season? Also, if you're looking for someone on your gift list, you need an idea for a particular type of book, call in. We can probably help you out. The number, 1-800-892-6477. 892-6477. Again, the email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Michael Herman, here's an email that came in from Tom in Peterborough. He says, thanks for the show. I'm looking for a few recommendations for architecture books. Thanks, Tom, for the email.
Well, it's a professional category in a way. It depends on what they're looking for. If they're looking for a kid who's just getting interested in it, there's a very small, slender university press book. It might be Princeton, just called How to Architect, which people have found, you know, very, very valuable to give to students of architecture. So that would be a good place to start if it's a rookie.
And you probably have a small segment of your store dedicated to architecture.
There are some professional books out there that we just don't carry because it's not a trade market. But we have a lot of coffee table type books and some more cultural critiques of architecture. Sure.
Great.
We actually do pretty well with the architecture section. One of the things I'm going to recommend to the emailer is that architects are often also urbanists, and there's a great new book called The Third Coast, When Chicago Built the American Dream, and it's about how the urban space of Chicago sort of invented artist styles and ideas that really shaped the post-World War II American culture. So that might be a great book for an architect.
And let's not forget, we just mentioned Howard Mansfield's book, Dwelling in Possibility,
right,
which would be great.
That would be a great gift for an architect.
And we interviewed Howard a couple months ago again on that book, so that's true. It's architecture, but it's architecture with a heart. That's Howard's thing.
Howard gives the best interviews, doesn't he?
Thanks a lot for that email. I hope we helped you out, Tom. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email again is exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And guys, I got a stack of emails and Facebook comments here. Here's a Facebook comment from Megan. Looking for a gift book, survival or not book, preferably in cold or ice. The recipient really loved Endurance, Shackleton's Incredible Voyage by Alfred Lansing. So that's a very specific genre, but hey, Megan knows what this person likes. Dan?
We had a book on our summer reading list called Frozen in Time, about a World War II plane crash in Greenland. It's by Mitchell Zukov.
Wow.
And that's your book.
Okay.
Another one to talk about in terms of fiction. There's a new book by Dan Simmons, and the title is escaping me.
Abominable.
The Abominable. It's if you want to read about survival in icy conditions.
So one nonfiction, one fiction. Yeah. Go.
All right, Megan, hope that helps. And here's another email that came in. This is from John in Tilton. Kansas City Lighting, The Rise and Times of Charlie Parker by Stanley Crouch. It's a biography of the great jazz musician. Guys, either of you?
It's been on our table. We've sold a few copies. I haven't seen any reviews of it yet, but I may have just missed
it. It's a great year for music books. So you've got Duke Ellington, a biography of Duke. It's a great year for music books for boomers, too, baby boomers. You've got Beatles versus Stones. You've got this incredible collection, coffee table book about all the Beatles lyrics. You've got a memoir by Graham Nash, Jimi Hendrix, somebody cobbled together some sayings by him and published it as a memoir. If you're a baby boomer and you like the music, Johnny Cash, kinds of stuff.
The music section always jumps at this time of year.
It sure does.
My personal favorite is also Beatles versus Stones. So.
Yeah. Beatles versus Stones.
Yeah. Which are you? Do you like the Beatles or do you like the Stones?
And it's in one book?
It's one book. It's actually how their images were sort of crafted deliberately back in the 60s. Flower power versus the edgy Stones, whereas in reality, it was sort of flipped. The Beatles had more edgy experiences and the Stones were just from the suburbs of London.
All right, I'm going to leave that for now. Thank you for the email.
My landlord might call in on that one. I'm a Stones fan.
Let's take another call. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Keep the emails coming to exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. And Ray's waiting in Whitefield. Hi, Ray. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Okay, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Two that I mentioned. I just finished reading a book called South of Broad, by an author named Pat Conroy, who wrote Prince of Tides. And I don't think I'm not a big Southern fan, but excellent, excellent writer. And the one that I really wanted to mention, though, there's a book up here called Names and Places of the White Mountains. And what it does, it gives a paragraph or two summary of a lot of the different places up here. I'll give you an example. Up in Lancaster, we have a mountain range called the Kilkenny Range. And what it does, it gives you a paragraph or two and explains how it got its name. Another one would be like Tuckerman's Ravine. How many people know how Tuckerman's Ravine got its name? But it's a, I said it's a book, they call Names and Places of the White Mountains, and I highly recommend anybody to come up and visit, they get this book, because it explains Huntington Ravine is another one. He was a professor from Dartmouth that he was a geologist in the late 1800s and how it got its name. But that book I would definitely recommend. It's not very expensive, and it's a fun book to read.
Oh, that's great, Ray. Thank you very much for calling in, and I hope that the gentleman who emailed earlier about his mother, who just moved to the state and wants to know more about New Hampshire, was hearing that. Right. Go ahead, Michael and Dan, go ahead.
Sure. I just wanted to say that Mike Dickerman, local writer and publisher of Boncliffe Books, has just come out with The Hiking History of the White Mountains. He's got a couple of different new books on the history of the whites.
And referring to the caller's other reference, South Abroad by Pat Conroy. Pat Conroy has a new book that the caller should read. It's called Death of Santini. It's a memoir about his relationship with his father and the end of his father's life. So, yep. And that book is selling like crazy.
It sure is.
All right, Ray, good to hear from you. And here's an email. This person didn't give a name, but says, my very favorite read this year was Me Before You by Jojo Moyes. It was so poignant, and I find myself thinking back to it often.
That is
Dan?
That is the book club book of the moment, I
really?
Think. Yeah, that book is breaking as a great book club book, along with a couple others, Light Between Oceans. And
Art Forger is another great book club book.
Yeah, talk a little bit about the book club phenomenon of last, I don't know, decade or two, really. I mean, that must be fantastic for you, Dan,
It's a great gig.
And when you say it's a perfect book club book, like what makes a book a perfect book club book and what
there
doesn't?
There have to be facets to the book that lead to discussion. Sometimes you read a book and there's just not a lot to talk about. It may be wonderful, it may change your life, but there has to be something that allows you to discuss it with your book club mates.
Beyond, it was great.
It can't just be, I liked it too.
I hated it.
Actually, when we have book clubs at the bookstore, I say, okay, did everybody read the book? Hands go up. Did everybody like the book? And I'm praying for somebody to say, no, I didn't like it.
Because that gets the conversation started.
It sure does.
Right.
Yeah, if they all like it, it can be a short meeting. Everybody's dragging out pictures of their grandchildren or something, you know.
There are actually authors that write books for book clubs. And when I say they write them for book clubs, they weave issues into their books so that there's discussion points for book clubs.
I hope it's not that calculated.
I think it is.
Do you? Don't name any names.
We won't name any names.
I was thinking that too, Michael. I thought, really, you should be good enough on your own. Do you really have to go that far? And
well, maybe it's
think
maybe
about book
it's,
club discussion points.
They think they're doing something else while they do that. Maybe I don't know.
All right.
Well, all right. Hey, we switched roles. I'm being cynical.
Let's take a call. Frank in Bedford is waiting. Hi, Frank, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I love the fact that you have the show every year. Laura, thank you for doing it.
Oh, you're welcome.
A book came out in September that I'm in the middle of, and two other people in the house are reading it as well. It's called The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America by Greg Easterbrook. He's written 10 books. One of them is Tuesday Morning Quarterback. Greg's a great writer. This is not a sports book, rah-rah book. It's a real look at college football, professional football. He highlights a wonderful program at Virginia Tech run by Frank Beamer, one of the only four or five really well-done college football programs in the country where students have to be athletes second, they have to be scholars first.
You know, Frank,
well done. And he focuses on the National Football League, which through its lobbyists got listed as a nonprofit organization, even though they make about $10 billion a year. Roger Goodell makes $30 million a year salary, but they pay no taxes.
Wow, I did not know that, Frank.
I got to look into that nonprofit.
Thank you for calling in because, first of all, football, the NFL in particular, has been under a lot of scrutiny in the past year or so with the players suing because of their head injuries and the illnesses that have come out of that. But second of all, sports books, they're popular.
Sports books are definitely popular. I do want to address the caller. There are three or four wonderful books about the NFL's, as you put it, scrutiny that it's undergoing right now and its own soul searching. It's becoming clear to many of us that we've been sitting at home or sitting in the stadiums watching these games, and we are Rome. We are sitting in the Colosseum, we're watching gladiators, and what is our role in this? So I would urge everyone to grab one of these books that talks about the concussion epidemic and other injuries that these athletes suffer and what our role in this is. And let's think critically about this as a culture. I don't mean to preach, but there's three or four great books that I would urge everyone to go out and find.
Michael, you've got a couple sports books on your list.
I do. Moving to America's Pastime, baseball. Actually, the most important sports book of the year is being published tomorrow.
That's true.
Really?
Yeah. It's by Ben Bradley, Jr. It's called The Kid, The Immortal Life of Ted Williams. And let me read to you the list of people who think this is the best book ever on Ted Williams. Ken Burns, Daniel Okrent, Dan Shaughnessy, Jane Levy, who wrote The Last Boy about Mickey Mantle, Bob Costas. Ben Bradley Jr. is a journalist. He spent, like, I think, 20 years writing this book. It's coming out tomorrow.
Wow.
If you have a baseball fan on your list, this is the book to get them.
Okay, just solved a problem for me. Thank you very much.
It's called The Kid.
The Kid.
Kid by Ben Bradley Jr. It'll be on my summer reading list. I just didn't have time to read it before the show.
Okay, so. But it's out. It's coming out tomorrow.
It's coming out tomorrow.
So if you want it for a gift.
You can't get it today.
It'll be there. Okay.
You can get it tomorrow.
All right. Thanks a lot again for that call. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. And let's go next to Mason. Talk to Douglas. Hi, Douglas. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning. I always love your book show, but my problem is I find I can buy them faster than I can read them.
I hear you.
Welcome to the club.
I'm looking here at a very quick read. It's about 120 pages on one of the sort of a working man's guide to one of the topics of the century, which is climate change. And it's by an Iowa state senator named Rob Hoag, H-O-G-G. And the title is America's Climate Century.
All right. Douglas, thanks for calling in. And, you know, we've talked about a lot of fun books and, you know, we talked about the Rolling Stones and the book that you just mentioned, Michael, about sports and Ted Williams. But there's some serious stuff, too. I mean, New Hampshire people like to dig into these issues.
Every once in a while. And, you know, it's a gift-giving season. So you have somebody on your list that wants a serious science book or wants a serious book about the arts. In terms of science, it's just come out in paperback, a book by David Quammen called Spillover, which is about the next epidemic or pandemic and how viruses hide in animal hosts and what we've done about these things in the past, what we can do about them in the future, and just how the science of it all works. It's called Spillover.
Yeah. Dan?
My book in this kind of area, the policy area, is The Unwinding in in Inner History of the New America by George Packer. This is one of my favorite five reads of the year. Just won the National Book Award in nonfiction. It's kind of follows the arc of five people through the 30 years that landed us where we are economically, starting with, you know, the late 70s, through the Reagan years, through the Clinton years, just really kind of paced together this amazing portrait. It's a mosaic is what it is, a portrait of the 30 years. It's a great book, The Unwinding by George Packer.
Another great science book by Daniel Lieberman, who's chair of the Department of Human Evolutionary Biology at Harvard, talks about the title is The Story of the Human Body, Evolution, Health, and Disease. And anytime you read about these paleo diets and what are humans adapted for and where is evolution taking us, this is the book to get. If you're interested in that topic, this is the book to get.
All right. Well, thanks for that call, Douglas. And here's an email that came in a little bit ago from Lenore in Brentwood. She says, please mention the books of Jasper Ford. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, because it's double F-O-R-D-E. Mm-hmm. He visited Water Street Bookstore in September. He was fabulous. His newest book is his second in the young adult book in a series titled The Song of the Quark Beast. Lenore says it, I loved it as much as my 9-year-old daughter. That's that crossover that we keep talking about. And Lenore, I hear you. I'm reading my kids' books all the time. Go ahead, Dan.
Thanks for the shout out, Lenore. we had the author at the store. We had Jasper Ford at the store.
So jealous.
Because my booksellers entered a contest and they won the contest for the best promotion of Jasper Ford over a certain period of time.
Like nationally?
I'm so proud of my books.
Wow. That's a big deal.
They're just amazing. Sarah Connell and Stephanie Kuiper and Heather Robichaux kind of put this little campaign together, and we won an appearance from Jasper Ford, and it was a mob scene, and he is such an incredible raconteur. So thank you for thanks for the shout out, Lenore.
Written both adult and young adult books, and you know, he wrote his first adult book was The Eyre Affair, as in Jane Eyre, and it's part fantasy, part science fiction, part literary romp. It's part detective story, part alternative history. It's just about everything you could want in a very, very fun book. And his character Thursday Next, Thursday Next, I know.
That's a great name.
Yeah, anyway, he's written a number of books.
Oh, Lenore, thank you so much for that. That's wonderful. And here's one from Gail in Londonderry. I'm going to read this quickly, but this is really interesting, too. She says she highly recommends Jill Lepore's new book, Book of Ages, The Life and Opinions of Jane Franklin. This is about Ben Franklin's sister, Jane, a book of ages that she kept over the course of her lifetime, as well as letters between Jane and Benjamin. Gail says her life was exactly the opposite of her brother's. She lived in obscurity, relative poverty, but she kept up a correspondence with Benjamin for their entire lives. A fascinating look at the life of a rather ordinary woman living in an extraordinary time. Gail, I had not heard of that. So that's fascinating. Here's another character from our history that we don't even know about.
Jill Lepore, the author, is someone we're going to hear from over and over again. She's an amazing historian, an amazing writer. She's relatively at the front end of her career. She's incredible, and that's a great call out. Thank you to the emailer.
Well, last question. I hope your families are both listening. What book do you want for Christmas, Michael?
I love getting books, and no one gives booksellers books. Thank you for mentioning that.
Oh, gosh, where to begin? I don't know.
Sounds like Dan's thought about this. Go ahead, Michael.
If anybody comes into any money, there's this marvelous edition of Ulysses with illustrations by Matisse. That's very rare.
Really? Wow.
So if anybody's got a spare 20 grand kicking around, that would be great.
You're not going to sell that, are you?
Oh, no, I'm going to have it.
Okay.
I would love someone to give me Patrick Lee Fermor, An Adventure by Artemis Cooper. Patrick Lee Fermor walked from the Hook of Holland to Constantinople right before World War II. He wrote an amazing two-volume sort of travelogue of that. He's one of my favorite writers. I would love someone to give me this.
Dan's more likely to get his
what he wants for Christmas than
I'm
you are.
So, yeah.
Well, guys, thank you very much. Happy holidays. It's really nice to see you. Michael, thank you for being here.
Are we done?
We are done.
Are you serious?
I am.
Well, it's been great to be here.
Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. Dan Chartrand, thank you also.
This is so much fun. Thank you, Laura.
Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter. Check out our website for their recommendations and other books mentioned this hour. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Canoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, NAFTA turns 20. President Bill Clinton signed the North American Free Trade Agreement in December 1993, eliminating all tariffs and trade restrictions among the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. But the treaty has had its controversy in all three nations. 2 decades later, we examine its impacts and which predictions about it have come true. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 959. Good morning. The Diane Rehm Show, next at 10. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Gibson's Bookstore, serving the readers of Concord since 1898, now in its new larger location at 45 South Main Street in Concord, gibsonsbookstore.com. And Comcast Business supporting New Hampshire Food Bank's collection of non-perishable food items at the New Hampshire for the Holidays Expo, December 7th and 8th. More at eventsnh.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
It's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. Yesterday, the Obama administration reported it had met its goal of getting the federal website for health insurance running smoothly. But it added there's much more to be done. After the initial rollout of healthcare.gov on October 1st,